Blog Talk Radio.
Who is January Jones? She is not a young, beautiful, talented actress on Mad Men. She is not an older, gorgeous, exotic dancer from the Johnny Carson Show. She is an author, and she wrote, Thou Shall Not Whine, the 11th Commandment, that reached number one at Amazon.com. She is a reality TV golf personality with World High Stakes Golf televised on HDNet. She is a humorist and winologist expert. She is your featured host today on January Jones Sharing Success Stories. So sit back, relax, and get ready to laugh and listen to Ms. Jones with her eclectic roster of guests as you learn life's lessons. These stories plus sharing equals success. Welcome, and remember, beware, because you are entering the no-whining world of January Jones.
Now let me ask you a question. Do you know that it will soon be the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination? That's hard to believe, isn't it? 50 years. My gosh, unbelievable. Tell me, do you remember where you were when it happened? Or were you even born then? Have you ever wanted to know why, 50 years later, we are still asking who killed Kennedy? Who do you think killed Kennedy? Everyone has a theory on that one. Tell me, do you know what the many myths about this murder are? We've heard them all through the years. Have you ever heard about an amazing book called Enemy of the Truth? Or better yet, would you like to meet someone who has some of the answers that you've been looking for about the JFK assassination? If you can answer yes, or maybe to any of these questions, then you are in the right place, and I would like to welcome you to January Jones Sharing Success Stories. Today I will be introducing you to my guest, who is an expert on the Kennedy assassination. She will provide us with wonderful information and some really, really great advice along the way. I'm pleased to announce that our show now has over 1.7 million listeners to date. Also, LinkedIn announced that my profile was one of the top 5% most viewed during 2012. Now, let me tell you about my guest today. She is a retired certified senior crime scene investigator. Yes, she's one of those CSI ladies. She's a law enforcement instructor with 30 years experience. She has testified as a court-certified expert in crime scene investigation, crime scene reconstruction, and bloodstain pattern analysis in Louisiana federal court and over 30 judicial districts in the states of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Florida. She is the author of numerous articles in professional publications, and she is recognized as an instructor in her field at state and national levels. My guest is the recipient of the prestigious JFK Lancer Mary Farrell New Pioneer Award, presented for advancing a better understanding of evidence in the Kennedy assassination through innovative research. It's my pleasure to welcome back to the show again, Sherry Feister. Hi, Sherry. How are you doing today?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I'm just thrilled to have you. You've been on the show before, and your interviews always get the best ratings because people are still asking who killed Kennedy, and people love talking about it. Before we get to that topic in your wonderful book, The Enemy of the Truth, let's talk a little bit about your own personal success story, and how did you get involved in CSI?
Well, I was a police officer that drove a marked vehicle with the lights on top. I had the uniform and the gun, and I was one of the very first women in my area of Louisiana that had that purpose in law enforcement. Most women were not on the road, and there were a few in detectives, but most people, our agencies, involved women behind the scenes.
Okay.
And
yeah,
so I was
sure.
very, very lucky to be able to do that. I went through the police academy. I had very good results. And the agency that I worked for had a major crime scene unit that addressed major crimes in seven parishes or counties if you live outside mm-hmm. of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
And so the officer on the street had to do all minor crime scenes. And as a result, I did burglaries and theft and, you know, I did
okay.
all
yeah, everything.
Right, a little bit of everything
uh-huh.
and wrote reports and testified. There was an opening in 1982 in the forensic unit. They wanted to uh-huh. expand it, and they were looking for someone, and they felt like I would be a smart choice.
Oh,
so they came
okay.
to me and asked me if I was interested in moving to the forensic unit. And I said, absolutely not. Why would I want to do that? Oh,
yeah.
my gosh. That just sounded awful. I would have to go on crime scenes and see all that blood and go to autopsies. And I just could not picture myself doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And the person that was speaking to me said, I really think that you're cut out to do this, and we'd like for you to reconsider. And I said, I don't think anything could change my mind. Well, a few days later, they brought me a book, and it was a book on forensic investigations, and said,
uh-huh.
we just want you to start reading the book. As I read the book, I realized, you know what? I am interested in this.
Yeah.
And not only that, but I begin to see that the characteristics of my personality and my abilities made me uniquely qualified to do that job. And so I went back to them and said, okay, I'm excited about doing this now. And that was the beginning of all of the education and specialized training that I had that uh-huh. went on for years and years that allowed me to become a forensic investigator.
Well, how old were you when this all came about, and what was your family's reaction to your career?
I was 30,
mm-hmm.
so I was much older than most people when they enter
mm-hmm.
law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
and my family thought I had lost my mind. Why would I want to do that? It was dangerous, and women don't do that. That's
uh-huh.
a man's job. What is wrong
uh-huh.
with you? that's the experience that I got from almost
yeah.
everyone.
I'm sure.
They say, you're a tiny person. You know, I'm not going to be able to do that. But, you know, actually I found out that being a tiny person doesn't stop you or hinder you. What really hinders you in police work is not being a smart person.
Oh, okay, okay.
Okay, you learn to work with what you have. You learn to read people. And, of course, I loved working the road. I thought that it was absolutely a great place for me, but
uh-huh.
I did come to learn that actually I was just born to do the forensics. It is in my bones, I'm telling
you. Oh, my
you.
Gosh.
It is.
Now,
I just love it.
Well, now share with my listeners what it entails. What kind of schooling, what kind of process does it take to become involved in CSI?
Well, you know, when I first went into forensic work, we didn't even use the word forensics very often.
Oh, okay.
Most people just said crime scene investigation.
Uh-huh.
So CSI was really the thing that people looked at. You couldn't go to college and get a degree in forensic investigation. Today,
really?
You can do that. Today, uh-huh. There's even in high school, you can take courses on forensics.
Uh-huh.
But at that time, that was not offered because forensics
uh-huh.
was very, very new. We were just starting to look at DNA evidence, just
sure.
starting to look at a database for fingerprints
uh-huh.
and tire tracks and ballistic evidence. All of those things came into existence once I was really in the forensic field. So
what did
everywhere.
You do? Yeah, so what did you do to get into the field? Did you have to take classes, or did you just learn? Did you have to learn while you were on the field?
Well, I did learn while I was in the field. However, the agency that I worked for was very progressive, and they felt like I needed to have the best of education, and they really invested in me. And they sent me to all kinds of courses. I have been to Kodak for photography courses. I've been to FBI for profiling. You know, I've been to fingerprinting and how to do sketches and all of the different things that deal with reconstructing crime scenes, like blood spatter analysis. Every little thing that you would do, how to collect the evidence, how to write the report, everything, they sent me to specialized schools. And the last time, I mean, I don't really know how many real-time hours I have, but it's close to 4,000 real-time specialized hours of training to do this job.
And tell me, were there other women doing this, or were you one of the very few out there doing this career?
Well, when I started, I was one of the very few women.
Uh-huh.
I would go to classes, and I would be the only female there.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And then they would, do the, okay, little lady, if you don't think you can handle this, you just let us know kind of thing.
I love it.
Right.
That somehow, you know, somehow that just doesn't surprise me when you tell me that. But that's part of the interesting part of your success story. And we're going to take a break and hear about your host right now. And when we come back with Sherry Feister, we're going to discuss with her how her career in CSI led her into investigating the John Kennedy assassination, which this year will be the 50th anniversary. We'll be right back with Sherry Feister.
Have you ever met someone who was unforgettable? Someone who has touched your heart and soul? People who have faced difficult problems? People who fearlessly shared their stories? People who have priceless personalities? I've been fortunate to host a talk show called January Jones Sharing Success Stories, and it's been my privilege to interview hundreds of guests. In my new ebook, we're talking about people dealing with problems such as incest, molestation, child abuse, drug abuse, and even polygamy. Then there are my guests dealing with physical struggles such as blindness, cancer, and birth defects. All of my guests have been exciting, eclectic, and energizing. I look forward to sharing them with you in my new ebook, Priceless Personalities, Success Stories Shared by January Jones. The introductory offer of $4.99 is now available at Amazon.com. Order it today.
And I'm pleased to announce that the paper book has just come out this week, and it's doing great at Amazon. If you order the paperback, you will get the Kindle edition for free. So I recommend that you do that. You know, what do you know about the assassination of President Kennedy? What conclusions do you believe to be correct concerning the fatal headshot, the limo stop, the single bullet theory, or the grassy knoll shooter? Would the evidence used to form your opinions meet the rigorous standards used in a court of law today? Tell me, what if there was a reliable way to identify the truth as opposed to suppositions concerning this assassination? Now, Sherry Feister, how did you get involved in it? Were you even alive when it happened?
I was in high school.
Oh, okay.
And, yes, but you know, like everyone else, I went home from school and was just glued to the television to watch everything as it unfolded. And, of course, I remember that so well, along with the assassination of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, I'm almost ashamed to say, that I was not one of those people that immediately became enamored with the assassination and research about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I went on to go to school, got married, had children, went to work as a police officer. And it wasn't until after I was actually a forensic expert and testifying in court as an expert that a family member came to me and said, please look at the Kennedy assassination.
Uh-huh.
And my response was, what can I possibly do that has not been done? I'm sure that everybody's done everything.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I just kept, I just thought, what could I possibly add?
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out that I was wrong and that there was a lot of misinformation out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I listened to that family member who is my sister and decided to take my day job investigating homicides, because basically that's all I did.
Uh-huh,
because remember, I lived in an area where the minor crimes were performed by the patrol officer.
Okay.
And I decided that I needed to speak out and give that information.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, I have to tell you that my peers said to me, Sherry, have you, this is political suicide. This is professional suicide. This is going to ruin you. Don't do it. But I have to tell you that for many years, I had an outgoing message on my emails, like many, many people do. And that message was, I am only one, but I am one. And even one can make a difference. So I'll do what I can and hope others do their part, because together we are more than just one.
Oh, wow.
And so, that has kind of been my motto for many, many years. And it really saddened me to know that the Kennedy assassination was just rife with distorted information.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what was really saddening for me is that the historical narrative of our country was incorrect.
Yeah.
And I could see so many people struggling to determine what was true and what wasn't. And I knew that I had that answer. And that I could help them by sharing my knowledge. So I decided to seriously look at the Kennedy assassination, and the results of that was a book that would be called Enemy of the Truth.
Now, how long did it take you to write this fabulous book?
Well, it took me about 18 months, and thank you for that nice compliment about the book.
Which is true.
Thank you. The reason that it took me so long is because there are a lot of different forensic fields that are touched upon in the book, and I wanted the absolute latest information to be provided, which means that as I would write the book, for each forensic field, frequently I'd have to go back, and I would have to research, has anything been added? So when I actually published the book in 2011, or 2012, excuse me, I knew that the information was there, was up to date to that point.
Okay.
And that the people could depend upon that information, that it wasn't outdated.
And
so that took a lot of time.
It did. Now, let's talk about the myths that you have posted on your website. What about the Dallas Police Department as far as following protocol? What happened there?
Well, I think that people say we can't hold the Dallas Police Department to the standards that we have today. And I believe that that's true. But I think that we should hold them accountable to the standards of 1963 and, in particular, to the standards of their particular police department.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, they did not follow their own protocol. They didn't follow the protocol of the day. And it is surprising because, you would think, oh, my gosh, it's the president's homicide. We're going to do every single thing to the book, to the letter. We're going to make sure everything is done correctly. But it just didn't happen like that.
Wow. Now, there's also a myth about the blood in the Zapruder home movie that it's faked. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, there are people that believe that it's faked because they believe in a front shot, and they think, well, how can the blood be coming out the front? If the shot came from the front, that can't be exit blood, so it must be faked in. However, there's actually two different types of patterns that are created. One is back spatter, which goes back toward the shooter, and that's what we're seeing in Zapruder 312. And then there's forward spatter that goes with the continued direction of force, and really in every conceivable direction, and that's called forward spatter. But you know, we did not know that backspatter existed until 1982.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's impossible to fake something that you don't even know exists.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing about it is that the yes. pattern shape, the dimensions of the pattern, the time that it's created, the time which it dissipates, everything about it is correct as we know research looks at backspatter today.
Okay.
So that absolutely tells us that the blood that we see in 313 could
mm-hmm.
not have been faked, and at least that portion of the Zapruder film has not been altered.
Okay, very good. Now, what about the myth about the ballistic test proves that there was a single shooter?
Well, the first ballistic tests that were done looked at the type of ammunition that Oswald used and said, this ammunition is so unique that it could not possibly have, no one could have had any other kind of ammunition that was used.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has to be Oswald's weapon.
Mm-hmm.
But later we found that that is not true.
Okay.
And there is not any way that we can match a particular bullet
mm-hmm.
with looking at the ballistic makeup, because you can't match it to a particular bullet because it doesn't work like that.
Okay.
Bullets are very different. And it's like saying, all redheads are the same.
Mm-hmm,
you can't
mm-hmm.
say that, you know. You can't
absolutely.
Say everybody's lasagna tastes the same. Nope, that
yeah.
doesn't work either.
Yeah.
And so that was a really misleading testimony that was given
uh-huh.
for the Warren Commission.
Sure.
But later they found out, as late as 2002, that was the first time they really started looking at it. But in fact, the ballistic testing that was done
mm-hmm.
Was found to be false in several different studies. And
wow.
in 2005, the FBI said, you know what? We are denouncing all comparative bullet lead analysis because there's no scientific ballistic testing that can provide conclusive results.
Okay.
So there's no ballistic evidence that supports Oswald being the only shooter.
A single shooter. Now, a lot of people believe that the fatal headshot originated from the grassy knoll. And is this a myth?
It is a myth. And it's one a lot of people want to cling to.
Uh-huh.
However, mathematically, it's impossible.
Impossible.
And I think that people say, you know, I believe in a shot from the front for the president. The question
uh-huh.
is they don't know where front is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the grassy knoll is to the right side of the president. So if a projectile struck the side of the president's head, then it would have exited on the same side that Jackie was sitting on and
right.
possibly injured her, and we would have damage on the left side of his head, but we don't.
Yeah.
So there's actually medical evidence that supports a shot directly from the front so that the projectile, all of the damage was restricted to the right side of his head.
Okay. Now, were there two simultaneous headshots? A lot of people believe that to this day.
Yes, a lot of people do. However, that has also been disproven.
Mm-hmm.
There have been a lot of studies recently concerning terminal ballistics or wound ballistics. And one of the things that they found out in the studies that have been released just in the last 2 or 3 years
uh-huh.
show that when a target is struck by a high-velocity projectile, it initially moves into the force, so against the force, and then when a sufficient amount of kinetic energy has been transferred from that moving bullet to the target,
mm-hmm.
the target then moves with the force of the bullet. So
okay.
seeing President Kennedy move slightly into the force or move slightly forward and
uh-huh.
then move backwards,
yeah.
it's actually consistent with a single gunshot wound from the front.
A single gunshot wound. So that is the single bullet theory is correct?
No.
No. Okay.
The single bullet theory
is not correct.
No. The single
no.
bullet theory says that a bullet excuse me, a bullet struck President Kennedy in the back of his neck, passed through his neck, exited at the front of his throat, entered Governor Connally's back and his right armpit, went through his torso, exited his chest below his right nipple, then struck his right wrist, shattered the radius bone, exited the base of his palm, and then embedded itself in his left thigh about 3 inches.
Wow.
So,
yeah,
you know, that's the single bullet. That's the single bullet theory. You know, this bullet that has to change a right to left direction, and it has to change in its downward and then upward trajectory.
Upward.
And
unbelievable.
That's what's magic about it, because, you know, it's just impossible. It's just impossible that that happened. And you know what's really strange is that when the House Select Committee asked the NASA scientist Thomas Canning to do a trajectory for them, and he looked at the single bullet theory, he provided them with 3 different trajectories. And they said, what are you doing? You have 3 trajectories. And he said, that's right, because the single bullet did not do this. There's not one trajectory. And it's actually in their report.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
You know, this is just fascinating, and I can't believe that everyone in the country isn't reading your book right now today as we speak, and maybe after this show they will be. We're going to take a break and hear from an organization that I support, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the forensics. Things that Sherry shares with us in her book, Enemy of the Truth. We'll be right back with Sherry Feister.
What is AATH? The Association for Applied and Therapeutic Humor is a nonprofit, member-driven international community of humor and laughter professionals and enthusiasts. AATH provides its members the education, cutting-edge resources, and supportive community they need to excel in the practice and promotion of healthy humor. AATH welcomes anyone who is interested in learning more about the application and benefits of therapeutic humor. Members include scholars, psychologists, counselors, nurses, social workers, physicians, educators, clergy, hospital clowns, and many others who incorporate humor in their life and work. AATH was created to disseminate information about humor and laughter, laughter play, and well-being. Provide a caring, supportive community of humor professionals and enthusiasts. Check out our AATH at www.aath.org today.
Welcome back with another wonderful, priceless personality, Sherry Feister. Sherry, I'd like you to share your website information and share with my listeners how they can get your wonderful book.
Thank you. The name of the book is Enemy of the Truth, Myth, Forensics, and the Kennedy Assassination, and it is available at sherryfeister.com, and that's sherryfeister.com. And it's also available through Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all of the other places that you would normally buy literature.
Okay, wonderful. And it is in Kindle. Your website's fantastic. I've spent a lot of time there. Anyone who is interested in this assassination, you need to go and check this website out. Actually, you need to buy this book. This book is written from the perspective of a court-certified forensic investigator. Its exceptional piece of scientific work looks at the assassination as a major crime, revealing truths that meet today's standard of evidence required to support a criminal conviction. Now, when this happened, none of this scientific work was applied to this assassination because it hadn't been discovered, right?
That's correct. That is correct. But, you know, every day in judicial districts all across the country, people go back and look at cold cases, and they take the information and the evidence that they had then, and they apply contemporary forensic investigative techniques and processes to that to solve the crime. And it was amazing, as I said, it was amazing to me that this has not been done with the Kennedy assassination. But I feel like I was very privileged to be able to do that. And, of course, everything within this book has been heavily peer-reviewed, and not one person that actually does this for a living has come forward and said, she didn't do it right. She's misinterpreted something. She's left something out. So I really do have the support of my peers, and I have to acknowledge that. I certainly appreciate that.
Now, why do you suspect that this hasn't been investigated with all the techniques that are now available? Is it because the Kennedy family didn't want to go further with it, or was it the government?
You know, I think it's a combination of a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
But I think one of the big things is that if you talk to people today and you say, oh, I'm really interested in the Kennedy assassination,
mm-hmm.
if you tell enough people, somebody's going to look at you like you have two heads. Because, you know, what has happened is conspiracy, instead of being a word that thinking people use, mm-hmm. it has come to mean someone that, you know, sleeps with a tinfoil hat at night.
Yeah.
That they don't know what they're doing. And
right.
as a result of that, professional people don't want to be aligned with it.
Mm-hmm.
And they
mm-hmm.
just see it as a dead-end street. I mean, if you speak up about it, nothing's going to happen. You're not really going to change anything. And people are going to think you're nuts. And when you get ready to go to court and testify as an expert, they're going mm-hmm. to bring this up.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know that from personal experience.
I bet you do. Let's talk a little bit now that we're into the topic of the forensics. Share with us the mechanics of the head wound ballistics that helped you create this book.
I think that when you ask about that, you have taken the most important point from the book to question
mm-hmm.
me about.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that, because the thing that most people have trouble with when they read Enemy of the Truth is they don't understand why the grassy knoll doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
They
mm-hmm.
can't. They don't really grasp that. But mm-hmm. you have got to understand head wound ballistics and what happens with that. When the bullet strikes the head, you immediately have a particular type of fracture that is made. Those
mm-hmm.
fractures originate from the point of entry, so that helps us to determine where the bullet struck the head.
Uh-huh.
Then, because the head is enclosed, you're going to have the transfer of kinetic energy. You're going to
mm-hmm.
have blood that's being produced and expressed out of the entry wound. And then
okay.
as, you know, more kinetic energy causes the skull to fracture in other ways, and all of those patterns and the beveling and as the target moves, all of those things together help us to understand the mechanics of head wound ballistics.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what helps us to understand trajectory.
Okay.
So you have to know that first. And so I think by educating my readers, you know, I don't ask them, just believe me, I'm the expert, trust me.
Yeah,
I
right.
never do that.
No.
I don't do that.
No.
In every single instance, in every chapter, in every type of forensic field that I address, I educate the reader and say, this is how you can apply it to the Kennedy assassination. And make
mm-hmm.
up your own mind, because we are all
right.
intelligent people.
Sure. Now, share with us the how you utilized high-speed photography and in writing this book.
High-speed photography was actually work that was not done for me, but by one of my peers. And
mm-hmm.
they looked at blood spatter as it was being created at 10,000 frames per second.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So each individual frame is 250 thousandths of a second.
Oh, my gosh.
And it allows us to really look at blood spatter and how it's created. And did you know that they have a bullet that's a 45 that's traversing a 1-inch thick bloody sponge? And they have the frame where that projectile is captured within that sponge, and there's blood spatter on both sides of the sponge.
Okay, okay.
So and the blood spatter is first created the moment it touches. So it doesn't, you know, this changes how we see blood spatter. and how how these things are created. And so that's one of the ways that it was used.
Well, this is such fantastic. Plus, the thing I love about your book is it's the kind of thing that it sounds technical, it sounds very scientific, but your presentation makes it very easy for the average person to understand it. And I love what you said earlier. It's not, you're not saying, you're not making conclusions. You're letting the people who read your book make their own conclusions. Yes, and that's very important. Now, what about fracture sequencing on the human skull? Talk about that a little bit.
You know, that is something that also is fairly new. There is documentation from the, as early as the Clark panel talking about what the fractures look like in President Kennedy's head. But we didn't realize the significance of them until many, many years later, when we understood that it helped us to determine what direction the shot would be coming from.
Okay.
So by looking at the fracture sequencing, it helps to confirm that we are, in fact, looking at a single gunshot wound to the head and that it came from the front of President Kennedy.
So that pretty much takes Oswald out of the equation, doesn't it?
It does. It absolutely does.
Yeah. Well, that's something I personally believe, and I think a lot of other people do, too. And reading your book will only confirm that. You know, we're going to take a break and hear from one of my sponsors. And when we come back with Sherry Feister, we're going to talk about target movement and gunshot injuries and the trajectory analysis for the fatal headshot that took President John F. Kennedy down 50 years ago. We'll be right back with Sherry Feister.
Are you a fitness professional, a trainer, or a coach? Would you like consistent and timely updates on your team's performance? We have a completely customizable app that can give you real-time information via the internet or your handheld phone. Track the performance of your client's progress with their physical fitness regimen. Track team members' performance or schedule a workout session. Meet up at the gym, on the bike trail, or wherever your physical activities take you. The app is called Socially Fit, or SoFit, and can be found on the iTunes Store. Look for the blue Socially Fit icon. When combined with data analysis capabilities, you not only feel the effects of your fitness routine, you also see the graphical progress of your results. The app makes the complex simple, so that more of your time is spent sculpting your physique, with less time tracking your results with old-fashioned pen and paper. Download it today to begin a new year with data to show your progress in meeting your goals. Are you socially fit?
I hope all of you listening are socially fit, and if not, I hope you will become socially fit. I also wanted to share with everyone that if you buy Sherry's book at her website, she will send you an autographed copy. And Sherry, share your website information one more time, please.
It's Sherry Feister, SHERRYFIES. T-E-R.com.
Wonderful. And anyone who is interested in this assassination, this is the go-to book. This is the expert speaking about something that happened 50 years ago when we're all still asking who killed Kennedy. Sherry, talk a little bit about the target movement in gunshot injuries, because this target was moving in this limousine down that street, wasn't he?
It was. We have the Zapruder film in addition to some others, and we see President Kennedy being shot in the head, and then his head moves forward slightly for one frame, and then his head and shoulders move backwards in response to the gunshot wound to the head.
Right.
That sudden forward movement is restricted to his head. The torso doesn't move. And in 1967, Josiah Thompson, who many people know as Tink Thompson, published the book 6 Seconds in Dallas, A Micro Study of the Kennedy Assassination, and he proposed that that forward movement followed by the backward movement must be the result of opposing projectile impacts to the skull. So the House Select Committee even looked at, are there 2 entry wounds, but it was dismissed because there wasn't enough evidence for them, physical, there was no physical evidence for them to say that he had been struck by two bullets.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they went along with pathology panel went along with a shot from the rear.
Right.
Because they didn't have the information that we have now. Of course, now those same people would not say that because now we have studies that show how
mm-hmm.
we can make a determination about which direction the bullet was traveling.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
in 2008,
mm-hmm.
a German researcher by the name of Bernard Karger started
uh-huh.
studying gunshot wounds to the head,
mm-hmm.
and he proved that targets move into the incoming bullet before
mm-hmm.
it moves back with the way that the bullet was traveling.
Okay.
And so when he published that in 2011, the author Robert Copeland photographed that and published
uh-huh.
that in 2011. So between 2008 and 2011, we came to know that forward movement is to be expected.
Okay.
And,
and so now
we know that it was from a single shot and not two.
And this is proof that that bullet approaching almost pulls you forward and then comes into you and explodes.
Yes.
This is fascinating information. And I'm so pleased to have you back on the show and to share this with our listeners. Now, before we go, I'd like to ask you, Sherry, you've had this experience writing this fantastic book and your career in CSI. Is there, tell me right now, what does success mean to you now that you've published this amazing book?
Success for me actually came before I published the book.
Okay.
Success for me came from knowing that my life's work made a difference.
Uh-huh.
You know, being able to speak for victims of homicides and
mm-hmm.
knowing that justice was done, that was
mm-hmm.
very, very satisfying to me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
share with my listeners.
For that.
Yeah, share with my listeners your first case. You talked about it earlier on another show when you had to investigate the murder of a child.
My very first case was a homicide, and it was of a baby.
Mm.
And I have to tell you, I thought on the drive over there, I mean, I knew where I was headed,
yeah.
and I was a mother. And I was thinking, how will I do this? And all eyes are going to be on me
mm-hmm.
because I'm going to be running this investigation.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I thought to myself, I think that I adopted the same thought process maybe that people in the medical field do. You
uh-huh,
have to
yeah.
focus on the job, and you
right.
have to let the personal side be mm-hmm. put away for a while. But mm-hmm. I have to tell you,
difficult.
I never worked a homicide where I was not affected in some way because,
mm-hmm, sure.
you know, it's
how can you not be?
Human life. That's right. And
yeah.
people that say, oh, well, you know, you become jaded after a while and it doesn't bother you. I don't think that that's true. I don't think it's been true for anyone that I've ever met that does this. I think
yeah.
we just learn to hide it
yeah.
at the appropriate time.
Yeah. Well, that certainly is the kind of thing that you take home with you. It's in your subliminal. It seeps into your DNA. It becomes a part of your life, and it's what makes you who you are today, and I appreciate you sharing that with my listeners. I know that's a difficult thing to talk about. When you look back on your career and your book and everything you've done, do you have any regrets or things you wish you could have done differently?
I think one of the big turning points in my career in forensics came when I started teaching.
Oh, okay.
When you teach something, you
mm-hmm.
have to know more because you have to be able to answer the questions. You have to know the background. You have to think
uh-huh.
about what rabbit hole might this take me down and where, you know, and how am I going to know? I have to know that too.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these other peripheral things you have to know about, which was what allowed me to write a book that is more that touches on things besides reconstruction of a crime scene. I had to know those other things. in order to really be able to teach the subject and to be able to do a really good job in reconstructing a crime scene. So I think that that was a turning point for me that at the time when, in the early 90s when I said, I'm going to teach in this field.
Okay. And and you've been retired now, and do you have any other books coming up?
I do. I have a book that I'm working on, trying hard to get it finished for the beginning of next year.
Good.
And it is on mind control in America.
Oh, okay.
The book is written in three sections. The first section is called The Puppet Masters. And
okay.
It's all the different kind of people that use mind control. Everything from bullying in school to abusive relationships, terrorism, and cults, you name it. The second section is called Pulling the Strings, and it actually explains how mind control is accomplished and how it's done.
Okay. Okay.
And
the third?
The last section is called The Marionettes, and those are the victims of mind control.
Fantastic. Now, you have to promise me that as soon as your book comes out that you'll come back and share it with our listeners.
I will. I absolutely will.
It's been wonderful having you back on the show, and we will be replaying this show quite a bit during November, the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination. To my listeners, we hope you've enjoyed this wonderful show today. Isn't Sherry the most fascinating CSI person that we've ever met? My upcoming guests for the rest of the week will amaze, amuse, and they will astonish you. This is the show where you hear inspiring information that will help you to become successful too. We would love to welcome you to our wonderful No Whining world. We love sharing our stories, our struggles, and our secrets for success. It's our hope we can encourage all of you to emulate our guests. Remember my mantra, if you think it, then you can do it. So for now, dear friends, please stop with the whining and start smiling, and then start sharing our show with everyone you know. And if that doesn't work, then start eating chocolate, lots and lots of chocolate. Thank you to my wonderful guest, Sherry Feister. This is January Jones thanking you for joining me today on my journey and reminding you to take care and stay safe.
We want to thank you for listening to January Jones Sharing Success Story. Always remember Ms. Jones' personal mantra, if you can think it, you can do it. That's what all of our guests have done with their lives, and so can you. You are the ultimate success coach in your own life. All you need to do will be to start sharing your own story with your family and friends. We hope that our guest stories will encourage you to explore an equation in your future that will combine your creativity plus connecting with others will enable you to be successful too. Always remember, your passion plus your purpose will equal prosperity as you explore the wonderful world of January Jones.
Bonnie, with our spectrum, what was the sign-in? What was your sign-in username at Spectrum, and what was your password?
Did you mark that down?
Oh, thank you.